This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And make sure you visit rocknashville.com. It's your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Joe, some big news coming out in the NFL yesterday regarding Matt Stafford of the Detroit Lions, who had originally tested positive for COVID-19 and had been put on the COVID-19 reserve list by the Lions. Well, turns out that was a false positive for Matt Stafford of the Detroit Lions, and it's kept him out, I think, for 4 days. But now a false positive. He's back. He's cleared. He's good to go to return to the team facilities. But it just kind of gets you thinking, like, what happens, and Munson brought this up, I think it's a great point, what happens, like, throughout the season if, like, somebody tests positive on a Friday, the game Sunday, and it turns out to be a false positive and they don't play? Like, how do you handle that if you're the NFL?
Yeah, I guess they just missed the game. It's the problem. You have false positive, you have false negatives.
Yeah.
You've got to have constant testing to, in some cases, to get the wrong turned into the right. So I don't know what the answer is on that other than test, and figure it out and hope that your tests are accurate and get better and get more accurate. And it's easier to test and easier to get results faster. I mean, it's because you'll have that. You'll have someone, I'm sure, miss a game. But again, you could also have someone play who tested negative. I mean, it's quite a pickle here. So I feel bad for you. Were in the break reading Stafford's wife, who by the way has had a tumor removed.
Yeah.
So when you hear about Matthew Stafford, my first thought was, man, that is not the family you want to have dealing with this. Now it was a benign tumor, but still a significant tumor that can cause issues, and of course that could mean further problems down the road. So the great news is it was a false positive, but it does kind of illuminate some of the issues here, and it sounds like it was tough for them even in a few days of people thinking that he was positive.
Yeah, and like to your point, Kelly Stafford, Matt Stafford's wife, I think came out on Instagram and said, you know, even after it was a false positive, our school told the kids they're not allowed back, approached in the grocery store and told that she was endangering others. My kids were harassed and kicked off a playground, so Kelly Stafford not overly happy with the NFL and their testing procedures at the moment, which I guess, given the situation, understandable. But also, it's also like if you're the NFL, like there's nothing you can really do about the testing positive. Sometimes you just get a false positive. It just happens. It happens in the real world. I know I've got three friends of mine who tested positive, turned out to be a false positive. Like it just happens.
Yeah. Yeah. You get better tests, get more tests. I don't know. And it's fine now. I mean, I don't know what Matthew Stafford missed. He missed a few days of people
stretching,
getting tested.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, once we get into the season, how many tests are just going to be met with, okay, are you sure? Do it again, because you could significantly alter the outcome of games and then standings in the season on this stuff.
Joe, we're here another day talking about the NFL, talking about the Titans, And Vic Beasley still has not reported to Titans training camp. The opt-out deadline is Thursday. I believe at 3 o'clock Central Time is the opt-out deadline. How concerned are we at this point that Vic Beasley is not going to be a part of the Tennessee Titans this year?
Well, you got to be majorly concerned. You know, the Titans put out the statement last week, and I guess it's been about a week or maybe Wednesday, Thursday last week that, you know, essentially that there was contact after there obviously wasn't. The fact that there wasn't is a huge red flag to me still. And now, every day, you're waiting for a transaction that says, you know, that Vic Beasley, and there's nothing. So I think there's a big possibility here that Vic Beasley's not part of this team, which means your top free agent signing is not happening. You know, if that's the case, you can get that money back, but like, you need people at that position more than anything. That free agent signing, I wasn't sure even addressed it well enough.
Yeah.
I'm still not, and I feel less confident. Let's say he does decide to show up. I think you got to have serious doubts if you're the Titans. I've got serious doubts about the guy now, about his commitment, professionalism. I mean, it's not showing professionalism to not send a text when you don't show up to your job. You just got paid $9.5 million to do this year. So I think yay or nay on him, the Titans have got to be looking around. And, I mean, basically there's two names. Obviously the name we talk about all the time, Jadeveon Clowney. Everson Griffin is another guy who's out there who's had some issues, older, has had some really good production at times too as a pass rusher. I don't know that he really fits what they do. I think Clowney can fit anywhere and certainly in this defense. But if they don't get Vic Beasley, then I think it's got to be throw the kitchen sink at Clowney.
How comfortable at that point, like what's the number you're willing to go to at that point? If Joe Rexrode is playing the role of John Robinson and spending the Titans money, what's the number you're willing to go to for Clowney?
Oh, gosh. I that's a good question.
Because he's probably going to ask for $20 million again at that point.
Yeah, he like, might.
Yeah, you know, I know you need me.
Right,
let's
right.
go $20
million. I mean, I might go 16, which is still overpaying. I mean, it's overpaying, but this defense, if you're talking about Harold Landry and then, you know, Kamale Correa, okay, Derek Roberson showing a little bit, Reggie Gilbert, you got DeAndre Walker, you know, basically his rookie year after missing his actual rookie year. I mean, look, any one or more than one of those guys could emerge and take a big step, but are you really confident in that? And the thing is, it's not like the Titans have even been able to, just like all the teams, they don't have information from the spring and signs of development on the field that you would have normally right now. It's, I mean, they've done a bunch of Zoom calls. So how confident can you be in that? Okay, great. Maybe okay, doing a great job with workouts and all that. Great job in the meetings. I mean, to me, you have to put down a big chunk of change to get someone who you know can make a difference. Because, again, it's not just Beasley. You also dump the salary of Jarrell Casey,
yep.
Which is – I agree with anyone who says that he was diminishing, but he was still an effective player, a guy who could have been effective this year. A guy who was effective in the playoffs. So you've got to find some people who can make a difference in that front seven for your defense and affect a quarterback, or this is just not going to be a very good defense.
Yeah, like I look at what's going on with them right now, regardless of whether or not Vic Beasley is here, I think there's going to be so much pressure on Harold Landry to be – a ton more consistent than he was last year. Cause he was fine last year. He had a nice season, but there were, you know, games at a time where he just kind of disappeared from a pass rushing standpoint, which I get it. It's his second year. It happens. This has got to be a breakthrough year for Harold Landry. I think regardless of whether or not Vic Beasley's there, because you can't trust Vic Beasley. And we knew that coming into this, like you can't trust Vic Beasley on the field anyway, because Yeah, he's got the talent, obviously, to be one of the best pass rushers in the league. He led the league in sacks in 2016. But since then, I mean, he's been a shell of that. I mean, even last year, what did he finish with? 8 sacks? I think like 4 of them came in the last 3 weeks or something like that. So it's not like he was some dominant pass rusher last year. So I think regardless, there was going to be a lot of pressure on Harold Landry this year to improve in the consistency of his performance. But if you don't have Beasley, and we'll just leave Clowney out of it for the sake of this discussion, there's a ton of pressure on Landry to get it done.
Yeah,
Landry, they don't have anything else.
Yeah, Landry talked yesterday and talked about, you know, what he's trying to develop in terms of counters, and he basically said, you know, trying to really be great with 2 or 3 moves, not have this huge repertoire. Look, the bottom line is, if they don't have something else, and again, I don't know that Beasley is even the guy to do this, but at least he gives you another option, and a guy who has produced. I mean, it's going to be tough sledding for Landry.
Yeah.
You know, if there isn't someone else to draw the attention of opposing offenses and offensive lines and game plans, and I think Landry is a nice young player. He's good. I don't know that he's ever going to be a blot out the sun dominant pass rusher. I don't know what he'll be. He can get a lot better, but it's going to be a lot harder for him if they don't have something more on the other side.
Maybe you can go sign Logan Ryan as a pass rusher. Maybe this game that Logan Ryan has played works out for him better in the long run anyway. He gets that pass rusher money.
Maybe he's been beefing up.
Yeah.
If he's been beefing up, you know, can bring him in.
I mean, he was one of their best pass rushers last year, Joe.
Logan Ryan was an incredible blitzer. I know people don't value that, but he was awfully good.
It's like, I mean, Corey Davis is a great blocker.
Hey, it's football.
Got to hit people.
Hey, it's
gotta block.
Hey, ask Derrick Henry how many of his runs Corey Davis was involved in. Everybody wants to laugh.
That's why he was taking 5th overall. Get out there and block, baby. Come on.
Hey, be a football player.
That's right. When we come back, how do we rank the AFC teams heading into training camp, at least the top portion? We're not going to go through the whole AFC, but how we rank the top half of the AFC heading into training camp. We'll do that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. The wonderful dulcet tones of Travis Tritt.
This is the Bonnie and Clyde, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I've heard this song.
Modern day Bonnie and Clyde. It's great. I think even Munson likes it.
It's cool.
He's bobbing his head.
It's cool. I like some Travis Tritt. You know, Travis Tritt's cool.
That didn't seem like a genuine cool to me.
He's cool. He's okay. Not cooler than
I
that
mean, he played it.
He did play it.
I did play it.
Counts for something.
I played it for 38 seconds, man. That should be enough for you, sir.
That's a good bump.
That's good. You know, as far as country songs go, it's not a bad bump. I like it.
Yeah. Country works for bump music. It's fine.
So you got to pick the right ones. Like, you can't pick Whiskey Lullaby by Brad Paisley, where it's not a good lead-in.
Now I want to hear Whiskey Lullaby by Brad Paisley.
And I'm not playing Luke Bryan.
Oh, that's a general life policy for me. Yeah. I don't do that.
Like, yeah? How come?
No offense out there if you like Luke Bryan.
No offense. If you like Luke Bryan, you like Luke. Hey, teach his own.
You do you, but you that's, do you, that ain't but my thing.
It's not my thing. I got a list of, like, people who I won't play.
Okay.
And look, I'm telling you,
Luke Bryan and Nickelback are like neck and neck of like two people that I will not play.
Country music died in 2009. Like, it just died. Now, look, don't get me wrong. There's still like a couple people out there now that I enjoy, but they are few and far between. Country music was dead 2009.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I said that about rock and roll and rap way before that, so. I guess music's just dead.
We have
the music that we like from 1973.
I'll stick with no that. More music. It's dead.
I still have Led Zeppelin 4. Just play it on a loop.
There you go. Joe, as we look ahead to NFL training camps, somewhat opening right now, it gets you thinking about the AFC and where the Titans fall in the power rankings heading into training camp. I'm going to assume that both of us have Kansas City at number one in the AFC. Is that a safe assumption, or would you like to go with somebody different for number one?
I mean, I will, but I think you can make a case for Baltimore.
I think you can, too.
With what they've done, I really like a lot of what they did in the offseason.
I can't go against 15. Mahomes, I just can't do it.
Yeah, I also, you know, the fact that they have Chris Jones And they've been able to sign everyone and keep that together. I really like the running back they draft. I think he fits perfectly with what they're going to do. So, slight edge. But I think it is almost a 1A, 1B situation for me. You know, Baltimore is just – they were so, at times, overwhelming with what they did offensively last year. Even though after the San Diego game – were they still San Diego? Or were they? I guess were they the LA Chargers at that point? The Chargers game the year before in the playoffs, they were like, "Oh, NFL teams have figured out this offense right. and Lamar and everything." Well, no, they didn't. Now, do I think it's going to be just like that all the time? Maybe. I mean, the Titans did a great job sure. against them. Clearly, helps a lot to get a lead. Teams didn't do that much last year on the Ravens. I am curious to see if they can continue crushing teams with that offense the way they did last year. I don't know. I think the coordinators will get better defending it. But I also think Lamar Jackson is going to get better. So I think they're going to be really, really tough this year. So those are my top two. I'm with you. Kansas City slightly ahead.
I think those are probably everyone's top two in the AFC, Baltimore, Kansas City, in whatever order you want to put them in. I go Kansas City. Most people probably go Kansas City. But I do think it's close. The big question is, who is the biggest challenger to those two, and where do the Titans fall in that mix? Because I think if you go from a national perspective, you're going to get varying answers. A lot of people like the Colts for some reason. I guess Phillip Rivers. I don't know. I like the Colts roster. I just don't trust Phillip Rivers. So that makes me hesitant with them. Some people will say, hey, you know, Ben Roethlisberger's coming back. He's healthy. That Steelers team was almost in the playoffs last year without him, with nobody at quarterback. What could they do if he stays healthy? Not a whole lot of respect nationally, I think, for the Titans, which is normal. But where do you think the Titans fall in this mix when you're talking about the biggest challengers to Kansas City and Baltimore?
See, the hard part about that is that just what we were talking about last segment. Right now, I'm looking at this Titans defense and saying, boy, if Vic Beasley is a thing, then we have to wait and see what they do next. But I would be very concerned about that defense as it stands.
Like, how are you going to get to Mahomes?
Yeah, how are you going to get to anybody? You know, Jeffrey Simmons is one of those certainly big individual storylines this year. What can he do with a healthy offseason? I think he could be a dominating football player. Could be, but we'll see. I think if things worked out that they could affect the quarterback at a decent rate, then I think the Titans have a case for the number three spot. I think the national view of the Titans is very much, they went 9-7.
Got hot.
They got hot. They had a couple upsets in the playoffs, but come on, it's Tannehill. What's he ever done? He was kind of out of his mind last year. The problem with the 9-7 thing is, again, they were 2-4.
Right.
Then they were 9-3 over the next 12 games with Tannehill. 2-4 without Tannehill. A lot of the view of them is Tannehill related. It's just, he's not that good. I think anyone around here who watched that team closely week after week at some point was like, I don't think I'm seeing smoke and mirrors. But I think I would say that the Titans, if they figure it out, if they have something there to get after the quarterback, to go with Harold Landry, if it's just Beasley, I'm still not convinced, but that's a lot better than not Beasley, then I think they could have a claim to the three spot. If not, the Colts – I love everything about their offense except Phillip Rivers.
Yes.
And he may be an upgrade, but I don't know. I have a hard time with him at his age. But he's going to have help with that great offensive line. I mean, Jonathan Taylor, I really like that pickup to go with Marlon Mack. They still have T.Y. He's a little bit banged up right now. But, I mean, there's a lot to like about that team. I just have a hard time buying Phillip Rivers. I have an easier time buying Deshaun Watson carrying that team than I do Phillip Rivers being carried by what's around him.
There's another AFC team that's getting a lot of love, and I can hardly say it without laughing, just because of how it's gone for them for the last 20 years. Everybody's on that Buffalo Bills bandwagon, baby. And a lot of it has to do, obviously, with Brady leaving the division, New England having like 10 opt-outs. Nobody's playing for them, apparently, this year. And that division as a whole is just not good. I mean, New England's lost a lot of players. Miami, I think they've done some good things, both in the draft and in free agency. I think they're going to be fine in a couple years, but probably not ready to go right now. And the Jets are the Jets. That's just what they are. So the Bills probably should win that division by default, but part of me still thinks they're going to find a way to screw it up. I mean, they were good last year, have a really good defense. They brought in Diggs at the wide receiver position. I just don't trust Josh Allen. I don't think he's that good.
Yeah. No, same here. Love their defense. And I like the Diggs signing. And you kind of saw in the playoff game, I mean, they were really taking it to Houston and Houston. And Josh Allen, just to me, he's a good athlete. He can make throws that are impressive. He is not consistent passing the football. And I think if you can't be consistently accurate on some throws that NFL quarterbacks should be able to make consistently, eventually it's going to catch up with you. But they're going to be there. Like you said, they should win the division.
Like, they'll probably win the division by default because that division sucks.
Yeah.
But, like, how good are they?
Yeah.
Like, what's their upside?
Again, I think when you have a defense like that, I don't think you can discount them. But I'd slot them a little bit behind the teams we're talking about. I don't know. I mean, they're still in that mix. Again, the Colts. I mean, like Phillip Rivers, I still probably trust him based on what he's done, even at his age, a little more than I trust Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And I like, again, a lot of what's around Phillip Rivers. Deshaun Watson, I mean, I hate it for him that he doesn't have DeAndre Hopkins. He does still have a pretty good receiving core. It's possible that David Johnson's healthy, even though they took on that horrible contract. What if he's healthy and really good catching the ball in the backfield like he was before? I mean, that could be still a dynamite offense even without Hopkins. So there's a lot of teams right in that tier, I think, after the Chiefs and Ravens. Like you said, the Steelers, I don't think you can discount them.
Yeah.
They were. They hung in there, and they were right there for a playoff spot with
Duck Hodges.
Very little quarterbacking. Yeah, they've got some things that you like about. Hey, I know you're going to laugh at this, but there's no pressure, no hype now. And they've done some things. The Cleveland Browns could be okay. I mean, I like the addition of Jack Conklin. They've done some things to be better up front. They've got a lot of talent.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield is talented. Last year, you could see it coming from a mile away. The Cleveland Browns are just going to fall on their face. But now no one's talking about them.
Yeah. No question about it. And did you see the Raiders yesterday come out with those offensive weapon pictures?
Mariota,
baby. Looks like a natural there in that Raiders jersey.
I saw someone tweet about this. Did they throw that out there and not have Derek Carr?
You're correct.
What does that mean?
No Derek Carr.
Is Mariota the starter?
Could be, man.
That's like they just sort of broke the news.
Hey, man.
Mariota looked pretty tough in that
silver.
Yeah, he
did. He's
black,
ready to
man.
Go.
I'm telling
ready
you.
To go. Marcus, rebirth of his career in Las Vegas. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. Tough news yesterday for the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll get into that a little bit more with Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian, who's covering the NBA in Orlando. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad taking you through this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's been a tough go of things so far in the NBA bubble in Orlando for the Memphis Grizzlies. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian. Drew, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, what's going on, guys? It's been an interesting couple of weeks for me, and it sounds like it's about to get even more interesting. So it was a little disappointing to obviously see the big news yesterday, but here we are.
Here we are, Drew, and you brought up the big news there. Jaren Jackson Jr. out for the rest of the season, a torn meniscus. It's hard to kind of overstate the importance of that loss, I think, for the Grizzlies. Where do they go from here?
Well, obviously it's a loss that's crushing and concerning, not just right now, but for the future. It's not like meniscus tears are something that are uncommon in the NBA. We've seen guys tear their meniscus and come back fine. I believe Paul George tore his meniscus. Zion had a meniscus injury earlier this season. Eric Bledsoe has had meniscus surgery. So it's not like that's uncommon, but it's still concerning when it's one of your franchise cornerstones and one of the guys that you hope is a part of this young core and is going to play for the team for a long time. And so 2 weeks ago, when the bubble was just getting ready to get started and we were looking at this, we were thinking, okay, what do the Grizzlies need to do to hang on to this number eight spot and get a first-round playoff series against the Lakers that everybody's been hoping for since the middle of the season? And the Grizzlies have really been a surprise, so it's kind of been, you know, icing on top. But now the concern immediately shifts from the tone, at least here this morning, is who cares about the rest of these games? We just hope that Jaren Jackson Jr. is ready to go next season and can get back to the same Jaren Jackson Jr. that he was before.
Yeah, it's tough, Drew, because he's been, and I know John Morant obviously is always must watch, and he's going to be Rookie of the Year, and he had a tough shooting night the other night, but you know, John Morant is John Morant, but Jaren Jackson to me has been just terrific for this team. I mean, it was so fun to watch Jackson and Zion go at each other. He had the huge shot late against San Antonio. He's been shooting the ball, attacking the rim, blocking shots. I feel like maybe people don't talk enough about him. You mentioned him as a cornerstone. I mean, I think those two guys could be really special together, Ja and Jaren, moving forward.
Oh, there's no question. Jaren Jackson Jr. was playing the best basketball in the bubble for the Grizzlies. And you're right, Ja Morant is always going to get a lot of that attention. And over the course of a full season, Ja Morant has been better than Jaren Jackson Jr. But I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. is still extremely underrated. And I think part of the reason is because he plays in a market like Memphis, which is a small market in the NBA, the smallest market in the NBA. His three-point shooting this year has been incredible. I believe he's one of only like four players, and one of them included Klay Thompson, to shoot 40% or close to 40% through his first two seasons from three-point range. I mean, he's been extremely impressive. And to do that as a forward is really the future of the NBA too. And so, yeah, while Ja Morant is easily the most beloved and the player that gets the most national attention for the Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson Jr. is every bit as much a part of this team's future and core. And so when the news came in yesterday, I mean, it's not just that it's Jaren Jackson Jr. It's that within the last 2 weeks, you have a guy like Tyus Jones get hurt, who they said might be out for a week with knee soreness. Now it's been a week and he's still not back. And from being down there and watching those games in between the timeouts, he's not moving around very well. So I wouldn't expect him to be back anytime soon. And then you've got Justice Winslow, the guy who you traded Andre Iguodala for and was your big chip at the trade deadline, and now he's out for the season too with a hip injury, never even played a game in a Grizzlies uniform this year. So it's just been an extremely disappointing 2 weeks for the organization, and this is the final blow. I think they're ready to the way I put it yesterday is, if this bubble experience is a Disney World ride, they're ready to get off. They're not the little kids that want to just keep going. They're done. They're done with the bubble experience.
Yeah, you mentioned it's heartbreaking for the Memphis Grizzlies, obviously, but they still do have some kind of positive, and that's Brandon Clark. And Brandon Clark has been phenomenal this year. Like, not a lot of expectations weren't on him. It was mostly on Ja Morant. But obviously, you know, Brandon Clark is going to be that guy that's pretty much going to play the next man up for Jaren Jackson.
Yeah, no, he's been great this year too. Another guy that honestly could get, first of all, he could be a first team all rookie. And then second, he, if you look at the numbers, could be at least considered for sixth man of the year, which for a rookie to do that and a guy that slipped on draft night is pretty impressive. And he's extremely efficient, extremely athletic. And he's been great this year off the bench as the sixth man. But the problem there that arises when you try to just swap the two of them is that the Grizzlies already are short on shooters, and Jaren Jackson Jr. is your best three-point shooter, and you're just your best shooter in general, and then you replace him with a guy like Brandon Clark, who has a totally different skill set and is going to catch lobs around the rim and dunk, and you sacrifice a whole lot of floor spacing, which you need to get Ja Morant the lanes to drive and do what he does best. So, yes, Brandon Clark's a very efficient player, a very talented player, but to just swap him and Jaren Jackson Jr., it's not as easy as people might think.
So what you're telling me is we're going to see more Anthony Tolliver.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Anthony Tolliver just because of his three-point shooting. And Anthony Tolliver, while he's been solid too, is not Jaren Jackson Jr. And I think that the Grizzlies fans are not thrilled to watch these last five games. They're happy their team is still playing. And don't get me wrong, the Grizzlies would still like to make the playoffs, but right now the priority is let's just get out of here healthy at this point because it's already gone. It's taken a turn for the worst.
Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian on the line with us. And, Drew, I kind of want to take a long-term approach with you here with this question. You mentioned Memphis being the smallest market in the NBA. Do you think Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson and the foundation they're building here over the course of the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, are they enough to attract some big-name free agents to come along with them and play in Memphis and truly make them a competitor for the title in the Western Conference?
Well, I would say this. I think that the Grizzlies, in their situation, more likely than not, if you're going to win a championship, you probably need to take the Raptors route, right? You need to hire a good coach who can get the guys organized and playing well every season. You need to acquire the talent through the draft and get your team better and get your team to the point where they're on the verge of, or at least one superstar away from making that title run. And I think when you look at what the Grizzlies have in place, they've got the talent. They're just missing a scoring wing or another person, another guy that can fill it up. Maybe you can attract that big time free agent. I seem to think that that's less likely. I think that you're more than likely going to have to either do it through the draft and make a big trade and acquire another big piece, or you just make a big trade for another superstar player. And however many years you sign that player for, you got that window to try and win a championship. I think for every small market, not just Memphis, that's probably the better plan or the better route to go. But no, of course, Memphis fans are already talking about it'd be great if we could get Zach LaVine, or it'd be great if we could get Bradley Beal. Like they have their eyes set on that. I just think that it might be a little bit more difficult than people might think to just sign a superstar player and put him in the smallest market in the NBA. It's just a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, Drew, when you look at these three games, and obviously, you know, Memphis is 0-3 in this bubble, but when you look at Ja Morant's performance, and obviously there's been a lot of criticism surrounding Ja Morant and how he's been performing in these three games, which I think he's performed well, but there's still parts of his game that needs a little bit elevation. So from those three games that you saw with the Grizzlies so far, what is it about Ja Morant's game that needs to be worked on to get him over that hump of the elite point guards when we talk about a Trae Young or a Damian Lillard?
Yeah, I think if you asked Ja Morant this question, he would probably look at the box score and read you his stats. He's done that a couple times already since he got down there to Orlando. The kid definitely doesn't lack confidence. That's not the problem. It's his shooting. I mean, it was a question coming into the season, and I think he was able to sort of prove people wrong a little bit. He was shooting 37% for most of the year, and that kept people honest. Now he goes down to the bubble, and I want to say he's like 1-for-16 or 1-for-11, something like that. I mean, he only made one three-pointer in the last game that they played against New Orleans, and it just happened to be the only contested one that he took the entire game. He set a career high for three-point attempts. It's his shooting. It has to improve. I think he knows that it has to improve. If he wants defenses to play him honest, he's got to be able to knock down that three-point shot at least sometimes, because right now defenders are just sagging off of him and daring him to do anything but go to the basket. And he's great at going to the basket. He still finds a way to score points. But if he really wants to be a true threat in every dimension, he needs to develop that three-point shot.
Yeah, like he's better than I thought he would be as a rookie in just in that area, but certainly some progress still to go there. So, Drew, to wrap it up, how's bubble life been for you?
I'm back. I got back yesterday, but bubble life was very strange. I agreed to a 7-day quarantine before I went down there. And I say bubble life. I was in the bubble plus, the bubble suburbs. They gave us two options. Like, they gave us the option to go sit and you get to watch the games, but you still don't have the face-to-face interaction, but you're there and you get to experience it and see what everything is like. Or, you know, it's just so expensive to send anybody inside, in the bubble, as we've been saying. So we went for the second option, and it's just weird. I mean, I agreed to a 7-day quarantine before I even went down there. I had to take a class about social distancing and everything. I took 3 coronavirus tests, you know, 1 before I left and then 2 when I got down there. It's just strange because you're in a hotel with all media and camera crews, and nobody is out doing anything. Everybody is just hiding in their rooms because everyone is afraid that they're going to end up getting the virus and it's going to be a huge waste of their time to be down there. So it's strange. It was a little boring, I got to be honest. And then when the game started, that was the fun part. And it's really weird to listen and to watch and just how quiet it gets. But there are moments in time, there are, when you watch the game, and even if it's dead silent, it's so intense, you just totally forget that the fans aren't there. So bubble life was cool. It was a little boring at times, just stuck in the hotel room. But it did feel like you were experiencing history.
Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Drew, we really appreciate you joining us, man. Thanks a lot.
Yep, anytime, guys.
Absolutely. When we come back, there's big breaking news in the world of college football. We'll react to that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Get 2 tickets for 2 parks for the price of 1. That's 2 tickets for the price of 1 for Beach Bend and Splash and Lagoon Water Park that are on sale now. Go to thegamenashville.com and click on the Beach Bend Buy 1, Get 1 free ad to purchase your tickets now for only $37.99. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, taking you through this Wednesday morning. And, Joe, we have big breaking news in the world of college football. The University of Connecticut has announced that they will not be playing football this season. They are the first FBS school to officially cancel their football season, and their director of athletics, Dave Benedict, came out with a statement that says, after receiving guidance from state and public health officials and consulting with football student athletes, we've decided that we will not compete on the gridiron this season. The safety challenges created by COVID-19 place our football student athletes at an unacceptable level of risk. So, Joe, we've been real nervous about college football this season and the future of it and what it's going to look like for the 2020 college football season. It's not a positive step, and I don't think University of Connecticut is going to be the last program to do this.
Yeah, it's just this sport just, I mean, you can't turn your head for 5 minutes. Something new is happening. I mean, this is a big thing, of course, and I agree with you. Look, Rutgers is UConn's independent. Rutgers is a team in a conference, a major conference, that has had major issues and related to one kid going off campus, being an asymptomatic carrier, one dorm party. They've got 28 positives. And in a state that's had a lot of problems, 16,000 deaths in New Jersey. So the Big Ten just put its schedule out just now, which, by the way, has Michigan, Ohio State October 24th.
So much different from normal.
Very strange. Colorado State last night, I don't know if you saw this, but there's been a big story out of Colorado State with some of the football players saying they've been told, don't tell us when you have symptoms.
It'll affect your playing time, yeah.
Yeah, keep your mouth shut and go out there and practice. I mean, it's just the whole thing is a mess that, again, for me, more and more, as much as I want college football to happen this fall, I feel like a decision and a multi-conference decision to take the time and plan something in the spring, even though it's going to mean a lot of players who wouldn't play, who won't play, who would have this fall, it seems like the way to go. But people are pressing forward. I mean, the Big Ten just put out its schedule. UConn cancels. There will be others that cancel. And I just – I don't see anything right now that's happening that makes me believe it's going to get any easier. I think it's going to get much tougher when students start showing up on these campuses, which is happening now or soon.
Ed, I'm looking at the Big Ten schedule right now, and it's kind of interesting the way they've done it. I mean, you've got the two byes, which you normally have in a college football season, but it seems like one half of the division has a bye on the same week, and then you go to another week, and the other half, or the next division, all have a bye on the same week. So it's like you're building time in,
yeah,
in case there's some game cancellations or you have to move some things around. An interesting scheduling quirk there from the Big Ten.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird because so the East, which is, you know, one of the top two divisions in college football, they have that. They have everyone having a bye next to last week. The West, for whatever weird reason, has everyone except Illinois and Rutgers. But maybe they just know Rutgers is just going to be –
not going
to
be playing.
Thing. You got this schedule, and like Rutgers could absolutely independently decide not to play. And then, I don't know, do you just keep this and say, all right, just that's just a bye for everybody, whoever has Rutgers schedule? I mean, it's already, I guess, technically a bye when you play Rutgers. Mean,
you could just give them the win.
Yeah, all due respect, Rutgers, but come on. It's never ending right now. And also, you have the NCAA still waiting to decide on other fall sports, on championships for other fall sports, which could mean, you know, the Power Five like separating in football, which again, I mean, that's a big potential development. There's been talk about that long before all this stuff. So there should be news on that today. And I just, in the big picture, the big question of college football, I'm struggling to see how it gets to where they want it to get. You know, I'm struggling to see how you're going to pull this off. We're seeing baseball. I'm still more confident, much more confident in the NFL, although I think there's going to be a lot of challenges. But they can do a lot of things that these college athletics programs simply can't.
I want to ask you about the Colorado State situation really quickly, because we talked about it a little bit there. In terms of, you know, players coming out and saying there are reports of coaches telling them, hey, if you're testing positive for COVID-19, keep it to yourself. Don't quarantine. Come to practice. If you don't do these things, your playing time is going to be impacted. If it turns out that these reports are true and there's an investigation done and they get to the bottom of this and find that these are real things that are happening at Colorado State, I mean, doesn't that have to be a fireable offense? Doesn't everybody on that coaching staff have to go at that point?
Yeah, I mean, whoever was involved. I mean, that's – I mean, gosh, I hadn't really thought about COVID-19 things in terms of NCAA violations.
Right.
But, man, can you hammer them too with something? Now, they've put out their statements that it's not true. There have been other players from Colorado State who tweeted in response to this that, you know, that they're – opposition to the story that they
sure.
That's not the experience they had. So it's not like once the story was posted, you know, it was either supported or you know, no comments from some of the players. Some of them have said, no, that's not, you know, it's exaggerated or whatever. But still, I mean, you obviously have some people. I mean, this is really troubling. If you've got anyone saying, don't report your symptoms, if you got anyone saying you're going to get reduced playing time if you quarantine, and then another claim, you know, that they're altering the contact tracing reports to keep them practicing. That's just, that's insane. You know, it's Colorado State for one thing. Like, I know that we're in Tennessee and far removed, but who cares? It's freaking Colorado State.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? I mean, this is the type of
like
thing.
Some football powerhouse like going on in there.
Munson's alma mater, you know. This is stuff that I expect from something like that. I'm just seeing if he's paying attention to
I
me.
I am. Colorado State sucks. That's what I took away.
That's what I took away
from that whole conversation.
But, like, look at everything that's going on. There are more and more we're seeing what people are talking about at Iowa And, you know, we've seen with the Pac-12, and more we're having players speak up. You know, Gary TCU, Patterson's under fire right now. You know, Nick Rolovich, Washington State, he gets his phone call taped. So now he's got to put out a statement. No, no, I'm cool with the Pac-12 thing. I wasn't going to kick him off the team.
I just said I was.
Yeah. I mean, and in this environment with everything, you know, everything can be recorded on video. Everything, I mean, everyone is being watched. And the fact that they would have the gall, maybe it's just one person or two people, but the gall to try this is unbelievable. And then not to mention how disgusting it is to not care about safety. And I don't want to hear a person say, they're young and healthy. Go look at the mom's Facebook post of the Indiana offensive lineman who right now is battling serious heart issues because he's got COVID. It affects different people differently. You can't sit here and say, everyone's going to be just fine. They're young. I mean, how could you, as a coach administrator who's supposed to be taking care of young people, go this route?
No, it's just very troubling. So I'm hoping that story is not true. I don't know why, if you're a player, you would make that up. Maybe it's, I don't know, you're not happy with playing time you think you may get, so you're making stuff up about the coach. I don't know. I'm hoping that story's not true. But if it is, I mean, whoever's involved in that has to be fired. I mean, there's just no way around it, in my opinion. When we come back, we're going to switch gears, talk about some hockey, get into the Preds and Coyotes a little bit, another series around the NHL. Scott Burnside from The Athletic will join us, a great writer for The Athletic. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.